Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. So thank you for being here. And I'm excited for today's show. We have a lot to talk about. So for those of you who don't know, my name's Darcy, and I am officially taking over Wednesdays and Fridays for Chuck and Julie. We'll have my new intro going soon and all kinds of great guests lined up in the next month. So with that said, yeah, so we have a lot to talk about in Colorado this week. We had a vice chair election. We have a House rep in HD 60 who is being primaried. So we're kind of going to jump into a lot of that today. And I've got a Steve Collier is going to jump on the call and discuss some of what's going on in Douglas County, as well as what went on in the election. He was part of the credentialing committee for Monday night's election, which, you know, not sure how many of you guys watched that. It was a little bit of a hot mess. But we have got to talk about this election. So, all right. So we had an election on Monday for vice chair. It was a vacancy. And that was a, what was his name? Seat. Who just resigned? Oh, Darrell E. Phelan just resigned. And so there was a vacancy election, and that was called on a Zoom meeting. The results of the Zoom meeting are that Richard Holtorf came out victorious over Mark Hampton, but there was a lot of foolishness that transpired on the call. Just a lot of, I mean, you know, people couldn't credential in, people couldn't do all kinds of things. And I just got a text from Steve. He's just running a minute or two late. So we'll be getting started with him at around probably like 3:12. So if anyone wants to call in and interrupt me or jump on, feel totally free, because right now I'm just kind of blabbing, setting the stage for you guys as to what all has gone on this week, so we can get right into it with our speakers. So the election Monday night, I am a bonus member, so I signed in at 5 o'clock to credential. That credentialing process went from at least 5 o'clock to 7:30. There was some question as to, you know, when people were allowed to stop credentialing, when that would end, and that was really never clarified. So we had people coming into credential throughout the meeting. There were several people that said that they would not show their IDs because they are afraid of AI identity theft. There were several people that didn't have identification. And so all of that to say, we really have no idea about the integrity of these Zoom elections. We don't know. It was a secret ballot, but when you are the owner of the Zoom account, you can access all of that information. So, for example, my vote, even though Hugo Chavez Rey, who is not on the credentialing committee or not part of the state party, couldn't see my vote, somebody like Britta or Heidi Ganahl, who has access to everything state party, could obviously see the way that I voted. So I'm not really sure what the purpose of a secret vote is when your vote's not protected. So so after the 2.5 hours of chaos, and like I said, Steve will be on in a little bit to run through this as his view from the credentialing committee. But then we'll also have Hugo Chavez Rayon to talk about this issue. We 2.5 hours of credentialing, we go into the meeting, and there was just issue after issue after issue. So people were getting logged out. They were having to come back into the call. They were experiencing issues with internet, phone connectivity. Like I have a brand new iPhone, so my phone stayed logged on to this meeting the entire call, which I mean, I want to say it ended around 11, but for many people with like older cell phones, I don't know how phones or computers were lasting throughout this entire debacle. And as a matter of fact, I want to say by the time the meeting adjourned, there was like 340 or 330 people. So that gives you a good idea, like a good 70 or 80 people, jumped off of this call. And I mean, that's really important because if we're not allowing proxies, we're not doing in-person meeting, like really, what are we doing with these Zoom votes? So yeah, Richard Holtorf, who, is not a conservative. I will just be blunt. Richard got on a call and talked about, or in a, on the House floor, and talked about how he values abortion because he was able to get an abortion for his girlfriend. Richard has dropped his gun on the House floor twice. Richard has one of the worst voting records in the state, and that is who walked away as our vice chair on Tuesday or on Monday. So, like I said, that's something we're going to delve pretty deeply into in the next couple of minutes. Why, and how did this person win? You know, he's told us who he is year after year, and yet we still elected him. So that's something that we're going to jump into. The other major issue that we have to discuss today is House District 60, which is the Pueblo. What else is down there? There's a Penrose, Florence. It's south of the Springs, that district. So it's actually one of my favorite areas in Colorado. So I found out last night that Stephanie Locke, who is our loyal and trusted House representative for House District 60, is actually being primaried actively as we speak by Michelle Gray. Unless something changes and Rep. Locke decides to run for another district, or unless Michelle decides to stand down, which is doesn't sound like she's going to. This is extremely unsettling as a Republican and for our GOP as a whole. For those who don't know, Rep. Stephanie Locke is the best voter in the House. She is just a little bit ahead of Scott Bottoms and Kendah Graf, and then there's Brandi Bradley and Ron Weinberg. But Stephanie Locke, year after year, has been literally the best voter in the House. So she is rated at the very top by Liberty Scorecard, meaning that her laws and the laws that she stands against anti-liberty laws, and she stands for liberty. And that is a huge deal. That is the saying I always go back to. That means she's not a Republican who is just content to basically, you know, go along to get along and say that we know best. Like we don't know best. I don't care who you are. Nobody knows best how to raise children in this state. Nobody, it's up to the parents. It's not up to the government. And that is why she consistently ranks highest. She understands out of her Republican colleagues that limited government is truly the our platform. So, all of that to say, I discovered yesterday that she is being primaried by Michelle Gray. Michelle Gray is the best friend of our committee woman. Our committee woman, Chrissy Ruckus, who is supported by Britta Horn and the rest of the party. So let's be honest, we all know what this is. This is not a small deal. So I just want everybody to conceptualize before we jump into this conversation. You know, Republicans primary each other all the time, right? Like that's common. The Democrats do the same thing, but when you are talking about primarying, like literally the best voter that we have in the House, then the question that you have to ask yourself is why? Like, why is this happening right now? Why is the party launching a primary against the best voter that there is? And when you start to really delve into it, then you understand that our party doesn't want good principled voters. They don't want solid conservatives. Our current GOP leadership, led by Britta Horn, shadow partied by Heidi Ganahl and friends, they want the Anschutz crew. They want the yes men. They want Republicans that are afraid to stand up. They want the people that say, well, I can't say this because then the Democrats are going to judge me. Then the Democrats are going to do this to me. That's the current state of our party. So currently in House District 60, that's what we have going on is we have a representative who is being primaried by who's being primaried by the committee woman's best friend and by the best friend of the party leadership, Britta Horn, Michelle Gray. So, you know, here's what I said in the chat last night, and Steve just texted saying he's about to get on. So you guys will have to listen to me blab for just like a second longer. Sorry. You know, it's almost egomaniacal to a certain extent, because anybody that could take a step back and say, okay, she's the best voter and she's actually the most godly woman that I know. I said that in the chat last night as well. The Signal chats, for those who aren't familiar, the Colorado GOP has several Signal chats that we all like to talk in every night. So what would lead somebody to say, okay, this person is the best voting representative that we have in the House. She is probably the closest to, you know, being a clergy member as you could possibly get. She walks in what she preaches. And so for an unelected, somebody who's never been elected to public office, that Michelle Gray, who has no voting record, what would make somebody like that say, okay, you know what I need to do? I need to primary this person. So ask yourself why that is. Why would somebody with no voting record, who's tied to the state GOP, why would they be running for the spot of the most principled House representative we have? And like I said, the answer is obvious. Everybody knows what's going on here. And what's going on is that our party, again, does not want principled conservatives. When we have more principled conservatives in office, the powers that be, Anschutz, you know, the Coors family at this point, basically all of these entities, that becomes the issue, is that they want people who are, like I said, not conservative. So we are in a bad spot in Colorado. You know, there's some thought that Rep Luck is going to be running for Senator Baisley's spot or potentially Secretary of State. I've heard out rumors about that. But the gist of the issue isn't that. The gist of the issue is that somebody, the powers that be, made the decision that she should not run for that spot and that somebody else would be better suited for that spot. And that is, again, what is so wildly inappropriate about this. And so in conversations today, I've been talking to people across the state and, you know, should Stephanie Luck decide that she is going to run for another position, then what needs to happen, which is already in the works, is that somebody who's actually conservative needs to go ahead and run for Stephanie Luck's old spot as well. This is not a House seat that should just be handed over to the moderates. So I don't know if potentially maybe Ron Hanks may be running or somebody else may be interested in jumping into that spot and running. But if you know anybody who lives in House District 60, this is a huge deal. Again, we cannot just hand this seat over. You know, she worked so hard for so long. She may Rep Luck maintain, like I said, the top voting spot. So to just basically like say, okay, somebody else can have this, that's not acceptable no matter what Stephanie decides to do. So we are going to be looking for somebody to run if that happens. If we'll be looking for somebody to run against Michelle, if nobody else is stepping forward. And so House District 60, we've got somebody primarying the most conservative rep we have. And then on Monday night, we just elected a pro-abortion, pro-tax, pro-big government Republican to our vice chair. So that is the state of the party right now. That is why so many of us, you know, every day are saying things like, we have to move Space Command. We have to stop fighting for these people. And I mean, I've got to be honest, that's where I'm at. When we have just this past week, we had Representative Gabe Evans went ahead and stood for the amnesty bill. Not one Republican voter in his district asked for that. And yet he took it upon himself to say, you know, I am going to go against President Trump and go against the Republican Party and allow as many illegals as want to be here as possible. And these are the things that we're up against in a blue state. And so it seems like every day it's more challenging to fight our elected Republicans and our elected officials that are supposed to be working for us than it is to actually fight the Democrats. So that's the state that we're in. And, you know, Steve can talk about that more in a minute, but that's why a lot of us are, like I said, wanting to move Space Command on out of here. We are at July 23rd. We have not heard one peep from the state party in regards to the school board elections. I think the only candidates that I've even heard the state party talking about this year are Gabe Evans. Basically, I think I saw an email for Boebert, but there's a lot of questions with that. So we know now, you know, Gabe's gonna be primaried. He's not gonna run unopposed, right? So is the state party participating in pre-primary endorsements by raising money for Gabe right now? And I believe, as well as many others believe, that they are. There's never been a state party that has contributed to candidates pre-primary. And here we are doing this basically unsolicited. The party is going along just raising money for Gabe every day. And Gabe is sailing our country down the river and handing it to illegals. So I'm not sure what. I mean, it is just a total mess up with the state GOP, just like the rest of the state is a mess. And this is what we have got to get control over or not, or just say at a certain point, you know, this is more than I'm willing to accept and I'm done. And I'm either, you know, moving or I'm out of the party or what have you. But I think there's a lot of us that are reaching that space because there's so few people willing to fight for us. And I should say, you know, because I'm pretty negative, and I should say there are some people that are fighting for us. So while most of our elected representatives are garbage, we have a Representative Scott Bottoms, who is doing a fantastic job up at the legislature. Stephanie Luck, obviously, I've talked about her extensively during this podcast. We have Brandy Bradley, who is doing a great job up there at the Capitol. Ken DeGraff is another great one. And of course, Ron Weinberg. And what do most of them have in common? Well, they're all being persecuted to a certain extent right now for various things. They are all being dragged through the mud, and that's where we are. So it's a hard day to be a Republican in Colorado. It's a hard day to do politics in Colorado. But you know, if you don't have that in you, if you're afraid of the Democrats, if you're afraid of what people are going to say about you, then there's no reason to be running for any type of office. And so I think that is, you know, where we where we are right now as a state, we have to either figure this out or, like I said, just go ahead and fold up the towel and say, all right, we're moving Space Command and that's it. And like I said, that's where many of us are. Sorry to glance away from my screen. I have to resend Mr. Collier the link. He is serving proudly our country right now, doing all kinds of things, and he lost his link. So he will be on any second. And so for those who don't know, he is a activist in Douglas County, Douglas County bonus member, and somebody that, you know, I rely on for advice, moral support, somebody that I guess I call when I'm super upset about everything going on in this state. And, you know, he's one of the strong conservatives that are left. He's one of the principal conservatives, Mr. Steve Collier is. And it's hard for people like this to just continue putting in the work day after day. We can go ahead and bring him on. Hey, Steve. Hey.
Hello, hello.
Making us wait in anticipation.
Yes, sorry about that.
It's okay. I know you're out there working. Thank you for getting on. So I don't know if you probably haven't.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, it's been, almost a month since I think we've last spoken. So I guess this marks the once a month engagement. So.
No, I'm going to get you on every Friday from now on. Every Wednesday and every Friday.
Oh, that's slightly frightening. But
so I was just telling the viewers about the Monday meeting and, you know, the absolute train wreck of what happened Monday. So give me your 2 cents, your rundown as having been on the credentialing committee.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, even though I'm in Douglas County, I'm also a bonus member for Douglas County representing the State Central Committee. Train wreck is a pretty good descriptor of what I witnessed Monday, and I try to be very, very fair. Most people that work with me know that I do attempt to be fair. I don't care what organization you are, political, nonprofit. Trying to run an effective organization's governing meeting with more than 400 people in a Zoom setting is just a massive recipe for failure. And the predictions of that, in my opinion, did come true.
Yeah.
I realize this kind of gets into the nuances. It gets into the rigmarole, if you will, of what it takes to govern. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Go ahead. We want to hear about the nuances.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I just, for listeners that might be like, oh God, this is crazy. This stuff that they do. But if you're going to have a meeting that's going to come out the other end in a legal way, that where things are accomplished based on established rules and procedures, you got to conduct yourself in that fashion. And, so whether it means people being recognized as members of the body to be able to make motions or respond to things. And I will even say, for including myself, there were some times that I made a point of inquiry and was never called upon. And it's not that it was not done in a nefarious manner. I don't believe it was that. It's just simply you cannot manage dozens and dozens of people who are requesting to speak when that opportunity comes up and do it correctly. And so right then and there, you've already missed the boat on being able to properly govern a meeting. That's only one instance. Another instance, I know of three other that I haven't 100% confirmed yet, but three individuals for sure that did not even receive the ability to vote when votes came up during the meeting. So right then and there, you've already negated the legality of the meeting, right? Because you've denied at least one of your members in the organization from being able to voice their vote on behalf of their community that they represent, including a sitting state representative, Brandy Bradley, just happens to be out of my county. So that was the second issue that came up. And the the third issue, there are some concerns and questions about credentialing. And for the people who watch this, credentialing is basically confirming that yes, you indeed can receive a valid vote and be in this meeting as a voting member. We have to credential and confirm you. And there are some questions as to the accuracy of that number, and that could have easily have been corrected and identified in a physical meeting. But in the virtual format, I think there was a lot of pressure to perform and to push this meeting forward. You could just tell that state party leadership was very keen on the fact that if it all collapsed, that it may have questioned their ability to properly organize and lead. And so I think they were under a lot of pressure to perform. But unfortunately for them, it's only going to lead to more questions of credibility and trust on the back end.
So, as part of the credentialing committee, did you hear any question, like after the meeting ended, has there been any uproar about people not being properly credentialed, or 'cause has that kind of all died down?
I will tell you, for the training, so for your listeners as well, I was also on that credentialing committee. There were several individuals that were on it. You come into the Zoom meeting and you kind of get thrown into individual small digital rooms to where I would review your photo ID, whether it's your driver's license, your concealed carry permit, whatnot. I then confirm your information based on your picture with you on our master list and say, okay, you're good to go. You should be in this meeting, and we'll credential you. I will tell you that in my process, I did not run into any issues. I had a couple of people who did not want to share their ID, but there were workarounds for that, for people to text in a copy of their ID, which I think still kind of probably violates what the intent was, that they didn't want to share their ID digitally. But that's, I guess, another issue for another time. So I personally did not run into issues. I do understand that Senator Wilson, the new senator from SD20, get the
Nine.
number right? Nope, I got the number
SD9.
wrong. For, yeah, I think that's HD20. I think they're right.
Yep,
But
you're
for
right.
Senate District 9, she kind of floated in between each of those rooms to kind of be an impartial observer of the credentialing process. Not my room, but she did indicate a couple of others. There were some instances of where IDs were not being properly checked, which again brings into questions the legality of the process. All unfortunate things. They could have been all completely avoided by going away from from the COVID era virtual meeting desires. We should have been well beyond that point. I guess that's up for a different type of debate, but to your original question on Monday night's meeting, I do have some real concerns about the credibility of it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What about okay, so I thought about this. My kids were running around the house on Monday night, and I thought, okay, what if I stepped away from my computer for a second, hypothetically, and it was time for a vote, and my son was at the computer and he voted. Who's to say that that didn't happen with all kinds of people all across? You wouldn't know, because unlike a real meeting where you're walking up there and you know that person hasn't left the building, if, and they have their ID. How, what integrity is there here?
There's none.
How, what, right?
There's there,
So
there would be no way to confirm whether that did or did not happen.
there wouldn't. And I mean, if there were 10 people in my house on Monday night and I walked away from my screen, then what all could have transpired? And that risk is doesn't exist in an in-person meeting.
It does not, because if you had to walk away or something like that, you just missed the
You
opportunity to
just
vote,
missed your
right?
vote.
That's on you. You weren't a responsible member of your county's SEC body, so representatives, if you will. But yeah, in that scenario, you could have logged in and be like, okay, here, Jack, you could just vote any which way you want. Like, I don't really care. Yeah, and so I mean, as long as there is a possibility of that, and there is, to an extent, a
There is.
probability level, it should be of concern to the integrity of the process. So that's what I go back to. We should want I don't care if you're in the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, you should want to walk away from your governing meetings of your organization going, I may not agree with the outcome, but I have 100% trust in the integrity of the process.
Right.
You, no,
Right.
no fair person can walk away from Monday's meeting saying that.
Nope, they can't. And I think that was everybody's point. I mean, like I talked about before you came on, that there was, we didn't even have the rules in our possession until like halfway through the meeting. There was some questioning as to, could you credential until the very end? And that was like really never even answered. And the rules didn't even address it. So what if I wanted to just not do that? I mean, like I said, I was busy with my kids Monday. What if I said, I'm just going to log in the second before it's time to vote for vice chair? I guess I don't understand this meeting or really understand even the integrity around it.
Well, you did mention something. I'd have to look at the minutes again because I don't want to say one way or another because I'm not 100% certain. But I'm wondering if there was even a motion made to close credentialing at a certain point. I know there was a question asked about it. I do
There
recall
was a
that,
question asked.
but I don't remember if there was a subsequent actual motion to go, motion to close the credentialing process. It had to have been because they did attempt to count them at some point, but I'm trying to remember if a formal motion was made. It could have been made. I just may not recall
I
specifically.
don't know.
O only the minutes from the meeting would show that. So.
We'll have to listen to it. I'll have to listen to it again. I know when I raised the question, I was told to shut up. So by somebody else, and I to this day, I don't even know who it was. But I mean, that kind of just shows how out of control that meeting is. And then there was the other guy in the chat. Who is it? Justin? Some, I don't even know what county he's from.
Oh,
That
from
was throwing
Weld, yeah.
wealth.
Yeah.
Okay. And
Yeah.
you brought up in one of the Signal chats that he should be receive some type of, I don't know. I mean, I know you can't kick them out. And like I
I think the word
said,
I would use is some sort of admonishment. You know, I mean, I know you can't do like a forced removal, but we also, so for your listeners, so they have context, right? There were some very crude remarks made about male genitalia and the need to do something with it. To one of the other members. I'll let your listeners fill in the blanks on that. But regardless of what it may be, it is completely unacceptable for that type of dialogue to be taking place in what I would like to consider to be a professional organization's meeting. And so there has to be some sort of crime and punishment, if you will. And I don't know what that is. I don't think it's ever even had to have been addressed because, again, in a physical meeting, none of this can possibly happen because you're going to get tarred and feathered. I don't think physically you will be, but metaphorically in a physical meeting when you were to do something. But sometimes we get people who decide to let their emotions run through their fingertips onto the keyboard and they just have diarrhea of the mouth whenever they think that they should be. And it's like, folks, this isn't Facebook or Twitter. This is a professional meeting with a Zoom chat function. So maybe we just have some members who are lacking in maturity, perhaps, to be a true member of this body.
Well, everybody's got courage when they're behind a keyboard. But to your point, imagine, and we keep talking about if this were a real meeting, if this were an in-person meeting, do you think we would have seen this individual, standing at the front of the Rock Church auditorium and saying, so and so needs to blah, 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 blah? And I don't think you would. I don't think he would have had the courage to do that.
I would agree with that.
So, I mean, and that's one of the other drawbacks is like of a Zoom meeting. And I see Hugo's here. We'll pull you in a second. One of the drawbacks of a Zoom meeting is that you have that keyboard courage in the chat, right? And people were bringing that up on Monday too. They were like, this chat should be shut down because I'm trying to raise questions in it. They're not being responded to. And then the chat kind of just turned into this three-ring circus.
Yeah, and I mean there is to conduct that meeting, we can debate properly, right? But to conduct it, you have to have the chat open. How if I have a question or a point of order or clarification, I got to be able to identify it. And just because I maybe click on Zoom's raise my hand, I could be raising my hand to to order takeout and maybe not even know it, right? So how do you do it? And the simple answer is, and I go back to originally what I told your listeners, is to conduct a professional meeting with that many people, virtual is not, it just cannot be that way. Could you get away with it with 50 to 100? Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's context dependent, but that many people for a statewide organization, there was nothing wrong with our previous proxy-based system where if you couldn't make it to a meeting because maybe it was in Gunnison and I live up in Sterling, I can't go all that way, I'm going to sign a letter, give it to the state secretary saying I have given my proxy vote to so-and-so, and they will carry it for me to the meeting. It's always had been that way. Never heard any consternation about that.
Right.
I don't know why we can't go back to that. Not to mention, I mean, I also look at it from other elements. When we all get together, there is a fellowship opportunity.
Yeah,
there's an opportunity to meet one another, network, have some understanding about what's going on up here. Or, hey, I didn't know that was happening to you. That's happening to us. Let's connect. Let's let's trade our contact info. You don't get those community opportunities you're doing this virtually. Frankly, if I'm state party leadership, I'd look for opportunities to make it into a fundraising event. Have Republican-owned food trucks on hand. Maybe have a raffle event in between the votes. There are so many things you
like
can
Ray
do
Garcia's
to help.
Hot dogs.
As frightening as that might be. Yes. No, I'm just kidding. Nothing is right. But there's so many other opportunities you can get out of a physical meeting. It just takes three-dimensional thinking and some creativity to go, what can we do and how can we do it better?
Exactly. And why are we doing it this way? Do you mind if I pull Hugo on so we can kind of talk about the results of this election?
Oh, Hugo's all right. You can bring
Hugo
on. Sure.
So, hey, Hugo.
Hello.
How are you? Thanks for jumping on. You know me and you know Steve, and you've probably listened. I've been laying the groundwork for the past 35 minutes, and Steve's been on, and we've been talking about the three-ring circus on Monday. I'd like to get your thoughts not only on the three-ring circus, but both of your guys' thoughts also on the outcome, what it says about us, and where do we go from here?
That's
so jump in, Hugo.
That's an insult to three-ring circuses. it was quite a spectacle. Let's just use that language. You know, or we can use Adam Schiff. I don't know. But no, it was just a debacle. It was expected. I really had higher hopes for the meeting. But I was holding out hope against hope. Based on what was going on. And to be honest with you, I'm really more disappointed in Greg Carlson, the parliamentarian.
I've heard that.
It seems like he's done a complete 180. I like the guy and I'm friends with him, but I just don't think he's been handling some of these issues correctly. Let's just say he's falling back on whatever the chair wants. And that's just the way it was designed to go. I mean, when I, on the second meeting, when my petition came up for discussion, I got the start and basically outlined the three items. I spoke a little bit, made some commentary, and then the next thing I know, she's moving on to, I think it was Steve Klenda. And then he made several comments that I wanted to respond to, but after my initial access, I was not given any additional access to rebut or reply to anything that he was saying. And he was just lying through his teeth, in my opinion.
It was messy. I mean, do you think that, you know, this Gregory Carlson debate kind of happened even under Dave back then? Because I'm just playing devil's advocate. People were like, well, you know, he's bought and paid for by Dave. And I never felt that way. None of us, I don't think any of us did. But now, you know, and I love the guy. I'll just put that out there. But he is employed by RMV, by Road to Red. We're getting emails, and Steve, you and I have talked about some of these emails. How to participate in a parade? Kind of weird things like that, where we kind of ask ourselves, like, okay, who's being paid here? Where is this money going? And what is the return going to be for the state GOP versus what is the return going to be for Heidi Gnall and company? So, when we're in a situation now where we've got the parliamentarian is actually employed by RMV and Road to Red, I mean, we're kind of approaching, I think, a conflict of interest.
Yeah, that occurred to me as well. And I haven't asked them that. I've been, I'm the current chair pro tem in Denver right now because our chairman is on leave of absence. And so I've been working with him on a program called Nucleus. That's
Oh,
a
yeah.
that's part of the Road to Red program. And we are looking to transition onto that, but I'm honest. If I'm being honest, I'm having second thoughts about doing anything with them
I
because,
would.
it's just I don't feel like our side of the aisle is being treated fairly or listened to
No.
or taken seriously. Everything is the way she wants it, and that's it. It's gotten to the point where her, Alec Hanna, have started to ghost me. They won't reply to my texts, my emails,
Yeah.
phone calls, and and I'm a county officer, so
I know.
imagine how they're treating other people.
Well, I mean, so the way that they, Steve, do you remember a couple months ago when I called you and I said they're doing something in El Paso? And I'm like, I'm just not comfortable with how they brought it in. So we experienced that in El Paso as well. And it was the way that it was kind of brought in and brought up to us was a little bit concerning because it was like basically, hey, these donors have bought you all a new program and now you need to use it. And it's like, well, what are the implications of it? Where is this data going? Who is this data being shared with? And what control do we have over our own information? And I don't think any of us have answered that question yet. What we do know, as you brought up, is that we're getting emails from RMV that are going to the state party list, which is exactly what, Westenheimer was pounced on for. And so now we've got RMV sending those out, and there's just, it's so blurry. I mean, even with Alec running the meeting, it's like, who is running what here? And if Heidi wanted to be chair, why not just run for chair?
I to clarify, and I do keep trying to mute because the cicadas here in Louisiana are really loud, so I think they would take over the meeting. But so to clarify, so everyone
Funny.
listening understands what we're talking about. What we're talking about is there's an organization called Road to Red that is ran by Heidi Gnall, and Road to Red is I guess this is where it gets into the gray area, not the red area, but is I think meant to be this kind of upstart conservative based type structural entity
Yeah.
that can assist anywhere from small grass organizations to county parties and I guess the state party as well to be this model for data collection and data analysis and stuff like that. So I think that's what's kind of put on paper. The concern though, and the reality is, I'm talking to other folks, is that they're because the state party is very much intertwined with whatever Road to Red is working to achieve, and no one really knows what the strategic, like, what does success look like working with Road to Red? No one's been able to answer that question for me, and I have had concerns because Road to Red, you'd mentioned like they conduct like trainings on how to run a parade or something like that. But they've also had other types of trainings on behalf of volunteers, whether at the county level or with like respective targeted conservative organizations. And my concern is where is the legal where are the legal waters between when you get on land and when you go back into the water? Like where is the dividing line on where they begin and where the party ends, or vice versa? And that's really important to me because Road to Red, based on the emails that I get from them promoting their events, they're collecting a lot of information. They're collecting data on volunteers joining their organizations, but none of it has any GOP branding on it.
Right.
Not one piece of it has anything that says Colorado GOP. So we're missing out on a massive, assuming things are being done on behalf of the state party. We're missing out on massive opportunities to frame and position the state party of, hey, we're out there conducting these community engagement organizations. We just happen to be outsourcing through our contractor, Road to Red. But to do that, to have a contract means you've been contracted, which means there should be some sort of legal agreement. To this day, no one, and I believe Ms. Ganahl confirmed in some communications, there is no legal agreement. So that means this thing is being done so haphazardly and so informally, it really gives me pause because it is the chair's responsibility to indemnify us contractually with entities up to like a certain amount. And I mean, a lot of us have talked about, hey, we're kind of waiting for the next filing with the FEC because we want to know that the money will ultimately tell us, are they making a disbursement and payment to these contractors, even though they indicated, I mean, I've been told that Heidi's not doing this at any cost, but I find that very challenging to believe. I could be wrong, and I want to be wrong on that, and I want to be fair on that. And we'll know, I think, at the end of July, so we're coming up next month, when that FEC filing hits in early August, we'll be able to determine one way or another.
Exactly. And I think that's when we'll find out too, like we talked about the other day, is there a lot of pre-primary nonsense? And, if the party is now in a position where it's donating probably small amounts of money to Gabe Evans, that is clearly against the bylaws. And I think 2 months ago, when we were not all in this position of, okay, everyone was kind of tolerating Gabe and saying maybe he'll do a good job, maybe he'll be better than we thought. Well, now we know that he's not, right? And we know that there will be we know that there will be another candidate, like, period. There's just going to be. There may be five or six more candidates. All of that to say, he's not the only primary candidate. So the party's sending out these emails in May and June and saying donate to Gabe Evans. I mean, in a sense, they're butting right up against those bylaws, if not breaking them, by saying to donate before the primary.
So I want to speak to that real quick. I have because I kind of have a different take on some of this, right? Like I know there's some differing opinions on Congressman Evans. I'm going to leave those opinions to the side because I really look at stuff from a functioning organizational standpoint. I'll let other people pontificate on the politics. But you and I, we actually recently spoke about this, and I think we actually kind of came up with an interesting solution to that. So, if Gabe Evans, if Congresswoman Boebert, they put out a fundraising email. Put out a fundraising letter. Cool. It's their entity. They're working to fundraise, right? And that's what they should be doing. But even they could be elected and sworn in the next day. They're already very technically starting to go into a pre-primary time frame, right? I know as weird as that sounds, but we
It
have to be clear about that, right? It's politics. It is what it
anything
is.
the day after.
However, well, I think one of the solutions is we can either at the state party level. Or we can work with our congressional district vacancy committees, and they can create their own 527 bucket for fundraising that any of the fundraising goes into the bucket.
Right.
And then you wait until the general election, and whoever wins the primary gets to tap into the bucket from late June until early November. And then after early November, the spigot gets turned off. And any fundraise, and then you essentially start the 24-month cycle, or I guess in that case, the 18-month cycle again to do additional fundraising. That would be very clean because it's not going to the candidate. We're not fundraising on behalf of any candidate. We're fundraising on behalf of the district. And so it doesn't, at that point, it doesn't matter who wins the primary because the funds have been raised for the specific and implicit purpose of supporting the general election candidate.
Right. I mean, and for us, we're in July. So, I mean, for the party to have contributed anything to Gabe Evans, and I know that, you're not going to delve into the political aspect of it right now, but it's just, no, I mean, that can't happen. And I think that overall, like today, July 23rd, Wednesday. I think what the three of us could agree on is that either there is not, the state of the party is not in a good place, or it's finding its place. We just don't know what they're doing right now. But it's very clear that there's a lot of chaos. Like Hugo said, Three Ring Circus is putting Monday kindly. The fact that Holtorf was just elected is basically putting the state of things kindly. Look, I'm not gonna sit on this
Well,
call and
I was gonna. I saw a report recently. I'm trying to remember where it was, but it showed Congressman Evans with 1.7 million in the bank. So I haven't done the research to see where that 1.7 came from, but it seems like he's pretty well funded right now.
well, he
So
raised.
if we're going to have a challenger, and I've heard a couple of names, but I don't know if anybody officially has announced, but this latest announcement by the congressman, I think certainly puts him in the target range of a challenger for the primary, because I don't think that most conservative Republicans are going to back what he's doing, and whoever's giving him advice, I think it's bad advice. Unfortunately, I have a suspicion that it's tied to the money he's getting. So,
Darcy, can you clarify for your listeners what the issue is that has recently popped up?
So with Gabe, he was one of 10 Republicans last week that sided with Democrats to support the amnesty bill. So right after the Big Beautiful Bill passed, they created an amnesty bill that would allow
This is the Dignity Act, correct?
dignity. Yes, and it
The
would allow
Dignity Act, yeah,
dignity.
that's what they call it.
And they 2.5 million more illegals would be protected by this Dignity Act, and they would, be allowed to work and so on and so forth. But as President Trump said, there's already a path for that. So what this is literally just bringing more in. And I mean, it took him no time at all to get in that seat and just say, well, since my family's Hispanic. I'm sorry, Hugo, your family's Hispanic too, right? So is mine. They came here the right way. Like,
What he came, that little video that he put out really caught me off guard. And to me, I met Gabe. We interviewed him on my podcast during the campaign. And that kind of floored me. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think his mindset was in that camp. And he was doing, he sounded like a Democrat,
I know.
to be honest with you. The
I know.
whole video sounded like a Democrat pull
Yeah.
for sympathy. And, what he's ignoring is the fact that in the Hispanic community, Hispanics who are legal citizens who came here the right way, over 80% oppose vehemently illegal immigration. I mean, a lot of them have family members who are in the pipeline trying to immigrate here the proper way. And here comes Evans wanting to put these people ahead of all those people in the line and create the so-called pathway to citizenship. It sickens me because, the president ran on mass deportations. He didn't hide his intent. Everybody's acting like what the president's doing is some sort of surprise. He's doing exactly what he campaigned to do and what he got elected to do. So I don't want to hear anything about, these poor migrants and how they're working hard and good people. And while
That's
all of
not
that may be
a problem.
true, it doesn't excuse the fact that they're here illegally.
Exactly. I mean, that is not our problem to take everybody else in who's having a hard time and just wants a chance. Like, there's 250 other countries in this world. Go to one of them. You don't have to come here. So,
I did want to clarify. So the Dignity Act has not even been introduced to committee yet for debate or consideration. It has just been initially put together. the actually author of that bill is a Republican out of Florida's
Okay.
27th district. I think Congresswoman Salazar. I can't recall the name, but so I want to be fair that I'm hoping that Mr. Evans, after receiving maybe some feedback from different communities, maybe reconsiders and re-reviews what's in the bill, and maybe has a come to Trump moment versus come to Jesus moment, that this is not exactly supported by the president's policies. But so I want to be fair. Like, it hasn't been voted on yet. It's nowhere near being voted on yet. But it should be concerning that anyone would be jumping onto a bill without maybe having all the details of it now.
Steve, I have recently sent him that very message, very clear message, and I haven't heard back yet, but yeah, I already sent out a message to him saying that this is wrong. He shouldn't be doing this, and now's the time to repent and change his mind and explain why.
Well, thank you for doing that. And, Steve, thanks for your positivity. I guess I'm not as optimistic. When they first started talking about it last week, unfortunately, he was one of the reps on the House floor that helped introduce its presence and how it came about. That to me was just, it wasn't like, okay, he just vaguely supports this. It was like he was part of this. I'd love to be wrong, and we don't have probably time to go into it. But I think on Friday we should probably jump deeper into some of the names we've heard as potential candidates, what people are doing out in DC, what people are saying out in DC. But let's be honest, I think that that's going to become necessary if Gabe doesn't back down, if he doesn't change his mind. I think, Steve, you're right. You want to give him the opportunity to do so, and I respect that. I'm not usually, that's not my political strategy, but sometimes I sit back and just listen when I'm able to. And I think that in this case, as Hugo said, he's raised so much money that, let's be honest, there's not going to be very many people that are able to take him out in a primary. So whoever does run against him, they've got to have a plan, and they better have President Trump behind them, or else you may as well not even run. But this is who we are in Colorado right now. We have a Republican representative who just apparently wants to allow more illegals in. Our newly voted in vice chair paid for his girlfriend's abortion and has a 55% voter rating with the Liberty scorecard. And we have a party that has not said one word about school board elections, which are now in less than 4 months. So, every time that it's easy to say, like, I want to throw in the towel and I want to stop fighting, you kind of realize, right, that you can't, because there's kids in this state, there's families in this state, and we all have people here that we care about. So that's why we're on this call, and that's why we want to hold people like Gabe and Holtorf accountable, right?
Well, in Denver, we are focusing on school races. We've got a couple of candidates that we're vetting right now, and so yes, we definitely are focused on the school races and maybe some other local races that we can do in Denver. But there's some things going on in Denver that haven't come out yet. But after Monday, we'll know a little bit more.
Hugo, you guys have come a long way from the days of Tay Anderson, so I guess kudos to that right there. So
Well, look at what they did last school board cycle. It was 2023, and it may sound, not that great, but listen, they got three members on the school board who in Denver who weren't associated with the teachers union in Denver. Like, that is massive.
yeah.
So they can probably make another dent this year and maybe get another one of them off. Or hey, who knows, maybe even elect a Republican I'd settle for an independent in Denver.
Here's the thing about our principles. They never go out of style, and they've always been proven to work. We just need to have the right folks to champion those principles and those values to the communities. I mean, I've always said that school choice and parental control, these are the issues for 2030. They are gonna control the next decade of political engagement with it's, I think so. In Colorado, these are going to be top issues. So I firmly believe we're on the right side of history on those issues. We just need to have the right people talk about them.
And I mean, just the right candidates running and just push that envelope further and further, you know, like it's and like we've always said, seclude, like pocket off those conservative localities and school boards and help them accomplish their goals and protect them from the state legislature, which continues to be a really, really important task that, look, we I'll say it again, we don't see the state GOP doing that either. You know, that was my role there when, as the laws are coming down, what policies can we write for school boards, county commissions, and city councils? And we can't forget about that, right? Just because the state says you have to do something or says that this doesn't mean that you do. You don't have to ever comply with those state laws. I mean, I'm a good example of that. I never do, and I'm not in prison, right? So like, why are these school boards capitulating? Why are these city councils capitulating? It's like we have to fight on all fronts, or we might as well not even fight. And standing up for our kids and writing policies around that and getting school board members elected, like we've got to start focusing on that. We're almost in August. So, like I said, I'm taking over Wednesdays and Fridays, and I would like to kind of see, you know, a constant stream of school board candidates and school board policies because if we're not standing for our kids, I don't know what we're doing as a party. Why are we here?
Yeah, I agree. By the way, if I might, a quick announcement. On August the 12th, we're holding a town hall in Colorado Springs. So at 6:30 at the church at Briargate, and the flyers are circulating. So
Who's we?
the Hispanic Patriot Podcast
Cool.
and CHR. We've got a panel of four elected officials. We've got Mark Baisley, Scott Bottoms, Ken DeGraff, and the newly elected Senator Linda Zamora Wilson.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to have this is going to be a true town hall. We want the questions coming from the audience
Okay.
so that we can get a feel for what the people are thinking about issues wise, then that'll give us a good opportunity. And Jeff Hunt from KNUS is going to be our
Oh,
moderator. So it'll be live streamed, but we want people to come too. They can make it live. So it's going to be the first event of the season that, you know, headed towards into the election cycle,
okay.
and we're hoping for a good turnout.
That's great. And you said it's August 6th.
August 12th. It's a
August 12th.
Tuesday, August 12th at 6:30 p.m.
Okay, awesome. I will definitely check that out. That sounds awesome. Steve, did
I'll
you?
send you the flyer.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Hugo, for being on today. I know I kind of approached you last minute, but it's just been a crazy week. There's a lot to talk about even on Friday. We're gonna have to go straight into the Gabe thing, and also we didn't even touch House District 60 today, so I will have to get
That's big news. Yep.
you
It's a
what?
big unfortunate news because it's ridiculous news. But I'll leave you with this. And when it comes to Mr. Evans or frankly anyone else, forgiveness never goes out of style, assuming that they give you something to forgive for. So
Well, exactly. Well, like I said, we'll talk about more about that on Friday. And Steve, thank you for coming on. You're such a good friend, and we do so much politically that, like, when you come on, it's like things kind of just, yeah, we were just talking about that. Yeah, we were just talking about that. So I appreciate you always coming on.
yeah, sure. No worries. Thank you for
Thank
the invite.
Thank you, Darcy.
you guys. And I hope you have a good rest of the week. And like I said, we will be back on Friday at 3 o'clock. To talk more in depth about these and some other issues going on. So thank you, Hugo, and thank you, Steve.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
So for those of you who didn't catch that part, like I said at the beginning of the call, we will be here for Friday at 3 o'clock as well. So every Wednesday and every Friday. And you can join us live. We'll have that up on my website soon as well. And we'll get my intro transitioned in. And Chuck and Julie are just having a great summer. Their son has been super busy with his golf and all the things he's doing. So I just, as I continue to say, I'm so thankful for them for this opportunity. This is one of the more fun things that I get to do in life. So I'm just really appreciative. So thank you, Chuck and Julie. And thank you to all you guys who attended the meeting on Monday. It may not have been the turnout we wanted, but you know, it isn't always that. We have to keep fighting. So with that, I will turn this over to the host so that they can transition us on to the next hour. So thank you for all of you that were here.